Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover luxurious duvet sets today. Visit harrycurry.com for stylish comfort this spring.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you today until 3 o'clock. Now, yesterday, I was having a chat with some sheep farmers from Wicklow who were talking about the dangers and the problems at this time of year in particular of sheep being worried by dogs. But a listener called in and was horrified to hear me use the following words for a female sheep. And this is lambing season, of course, because you could be talking about pregnant sheep being ewes being worried. Ewes, I said it. Louise, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie.
What do you call a female sheep, Louise?
I call it a ewe.
Fair play to you. you're a sheep farmer, Louise.
Yeah, we have a few sheep in Wicklow also, and we've brought our ewes in for lambing now. They're in the shed. I fed them this morning. We have a lot of foreign students that come to help us on the farm, and I have to explain to them that it's spelled E-W-E and it's pronounced Y-O, like yo, as in hi, yo.
And would you have always said yo? Because I know that when I learned how to read and spell in school, I would have understood you to be pronounced you, E-W-E to be pronounced you. But it was really just through listening to usage over the years, I realised that if you're talking to farmers, you need to say yo if you want them to understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I was probably the same. I didn't know anything about sheep until my partner is the actual sheep farmer, until I moved here with him. But it's definitely, I've never heard any farmer that isn't from, you know, the area. We've had some people from the Southern Hemisphere, from Australia, New Zealand, and they say you, but any Irish person I've spoken to says you.
Yeah, I'd love to know, is there parts of Ireland where you is the more common usage? Because, as I say, over the years, every farmer I've spoken to has used the word you when they're talking about their sheep.
And I'm pretty sure Philip Boucher-Hayes at the weekend says yo's as well.
Does he?
Pretty sure.
Oh, well, no.
Yeah, he does the farming show on Saturday morning, and I'm pretty sure he says yo's.
If Philip Boucher-Hayes says yo, I'm pretty confident I'm on the right track then, to be fair.
I think you are too.
No, because this caller was, I think, genuinely kind of horrified that a journalist, a presenter in RTE would be using the wrong word for a sheep, or to be are pronouncing it that way. And we do have this thing, don't we, that there's the right way to say something, and it's often not how it's pronounced regionally.
Yeah, true. Castlereagh, Castlereagh. But I think in a situation where you're the journalist and you're speaking to a farmer and he's obviously the expert, you have to
defer.
Deflect. He's definitely defer to his expertise. He's the expert in that situation. And yeah, if he says yo, you say yo.
What the other? Of course, the one everyone brings up, and I was asking Louise about it in the last hour. Scone or scone?
Yeah, I'm a scone person, but my mum is scone.
Ah, and is your mum Irish or
Irish from Galway? And she says scone, I say scone.
Interesting. Galway Irish saying scone, I would have thought, because you do hear some people from the north of Ireland, Northern Ireland, saying scone. But unusual enough in the west, I would have thought, maybe I'm wrong. I want to, if anyone's out there from Galway and they want to tell me that scone is the proper word for that and lovely baked goods that we always like to eat, do give us a call. You must be busy enough now, Louise, are you? This is lambing season, isn't it?
It is. We lamb a little bit later than everybody else because we're at quite a high altitude, but I'm just gearing up for it.
Yeah. My other one that I was talking about today with Louise is what you call your mother.
I grew up calling my mother mum, but we've recently changed it to mother. We've decided it's nicer.
And now, is that when you say we, are you talking about yourself and your mom, your siblings?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Myself and my mom. Yeah.
She likes to be called mother.
Well, she didn't. We were just sort of joking about it. And I said, I think it's sort of elegant to call you mother. So now when I ring her, I say, hello, mother. It's a little bit of a joke, but it is nice. I think it's nice to call her mother. She always called her my grandmother. She always called her mother, mother.
So it's following.
It's an age thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think mine do sometimes say that as a joke, mother. Because there is that issue about people calling their mother mom. Did you say mom? Yeah, you call your mother mom as well.
Mom. As opposed to M-O-M.
Mom was what we said down in Kerry, and that was a very common thing. And Kerry, and we've been accused of using an Americanism, because, of course, that's a very American-sounding word as well. But it's from the Irish Vami. I think that's why so many people, not just Kerry, but I think up along the Western Seaboard, a lot of people use the mom word for their mothers. What about? hang on, say there, Louise. I've got Hillary. Okay. Hillary, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you doing, Katie?
What would you call a female sheep?
A ewe. Sorry.
Okay, we're going to have to go with the full list then. Would you be a scone or a scone?
Oh, scone.
Okay, we'll get you back in there. So would you say, have you any connection with farming?
No, just from talking to farmers who are customers. I wouldn't have any connection. But I would take a prompt from them if they say, yo, I'll say fair enough.
Customers where would they be customers, Hillary?
A pub.
Oh, you're a pub. Okay, right.
Bar work, yeah.
So you basically what's that called? You're mirroring there. If they say yo, you say yo.
I'm not going to disagree with somebody if it's their job. Like, I'm not going to argue with somebody. But if I was reading out something and it was EWE, I would say you.
In your head.
Yeah, yeah.
And what about the mom, mother, ma'am?
Ma'am, mammy. But funny you should say about the Kerry thing, because we had a guy here from kind of Kerry border, and he used to say mom, and I remember thinking that's kind of odd. And then as it went on, I realised no, it was just again from the word mommy. It wasn't being Americanized. It was more rural, I suppose. It was more authentic. But I would say ma'am or mammy.
Yeah, it's funny though, that American thing, because I do, if you listen to younger, you know, teenagers now, who of course are on Instagram and YouTube videos and TikTok and all of that, I do think the regional accents are being sort of evened out.
Oh yeah, oh, it's all like they're losing them big time. It's cringeable to hear some of the teenagers. Now, I'm lucky where I am. There's very little of that. We're just, you know, but when you hear that Americanization thing, and it's just, and they're going up and they're finishing their sentences, and yeah, it's shocking, you know, it really is, because your accent, you know, it's where you're from. You should embrace it. There should be no shame. There's nothing wrong with speaking kind of well or correctly if you need it to be distinctive for a job. But you should never be ashamed of where you're from or where your accent is from. And I think we're losing that. Like, I think culturally and overall, we're losing that big time.
What's
off of that?
Where's your favourite regional accent, would you say?
Ooh, I don't know. I live in Cork, so I do love the Cork one, but I think Donegal is gorgeous as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Donegal is it's very musical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's something about a Cork accent that's just, it's infectious.
And are you're originally from Cork yourself, Hillary, are you?
No, I'm Waterford.
That's what I was thinking. Waterford. I was thinking you don't have a very strong Cork accent.
No, it depends on who I'm talking to. if I'm talking to a customer, I probably am. No, I'm Waterford. Lived in Dublin for years, and I'm in Cork for years. So,
I do think we do tend to give people a hard time if we think that they have that they have deliberately dropped their accent or they're, you know, they're trying to take on that. But I think, you know, I do think some people have an ear for...
Well, I'd be very guilty of it. If I'm talking to somebody before I know it, my accent has changed. And then they might hear me talking to somebody else. I'm sure they're thinking, geez, like, what's wrong with her? You know, that's not... I didn't think she spoke like that. But it's... And you nearly feel rude, but it's... I don't know. It's just what happens to me anyway.
It probably means you're very empathetic, Hillary. That's what I'd be saying there now.
Thanks. I take it.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for that. Catherine.
Thanks,
Catherine, what does your son call you?
My son calls me mother, as in M-U-D-D-E-R.
I love it. Where are you from, Catherine?
Burns Grove, Ballyragget, St Kilkenny.
Oh, Kilkenny, indeed.
Out the country.
I did a very short stint in the Kilkenny People once, and there was a man who used to work in there who used to joke, when we were doing the notes, he used to go, Bally Regret for Ballyrag.
That's the same place.
Indeed.
Absolutely.
and do you like being called Mother, Catherine?
I don't mind. It's an improvement from, he used to call me when he was a foot under me, Ma, and I did feel like a sheep, as in yo.
Oh yeah, what would you call a sheep, Catherine?
I would call a sheep a yo.
Okay, we're chalking down. We've got three yos now to the one you. I think the yos are winning today.
Catherine, I think so.
And would you
the
have
you is kind of as in you?
Yeah,
you.
And would you have a scone or a scone, Catherine?
I'd have a scone.
Indeed, as I would myself.
Yeah. My daughter now, she calls it a scone. I have a few scones for you.
And where did she get that now from?
Don't ask me.
Right. No, notions, suppose, Catherine, notions.
Trying to sound posh.
Catherine, thank you for that. Have we got Austin? Austin. Good afternoon.
Hi,
oh, Austin.
Hi,
Carl,
Casey.
How are you?
Well, thank you very much. Very well, thanks a million.
When you were eating a scone?
So what I heard was, if you're eating it, it's scone, and if you've eaten it, it's scone.
Right. where are you from, Austin?
I'm actually a Dub, so I'm from Stillorgan.
Right. So... Yeah, you have a sort of a kind of a bit of a neutral accent, though, don't you?
I do, yeah. So, yeah, well, I think everybody thinks their accent is neutral, don't they, until you go abroad. Yeah, but yeah.
Yeah.
My mother did call it a scone when I was young. She's from Limerick, so she was. And so when I was growing up, it was always known as a scone. Yeah.
And that's interesting now. So there must be, because I remember we had, with Galway as well saying scone. And I have to say that was only something I saw on the television. Scone. I never heard anyone in my around us calling it scone, saying scone as kids.
I'm a friend up north, and I remember someone else was talking, used the word scone, and he thought that was super posh, scone. He says, "You say scone," because up north he says we say scone, as if it was the working class. So depends where you are, depends which has perception, whether it's working class or posh.
And I think there is a Scottish Scots Gaelic as well. I think in Scotland it's nearly always scone, I think, isn't it?
That's right. I think so. Yeah, that's right.
So that's probably part of it. We've a member of our live line team from Antrim, and they were insisting today that it is scone. What are we talking about? What about you and yo?
Well, I used to call it you, but then I met a woman farmer from Wicklow I know well now, and I learned it's a yo. Yeah, so
not just
in my place.
Not just yo. Not just yo. Yo.
Yo, exactly.
Do you think that there is snobbery still around accents?
It's funny. I think there is snobbery around accents, and I do think accents. I mean, if you come from inner city Dublin, I think your accents, you know, lead you to be stigmatized. So I do think it's not just snobbery, but there can be, it can lead to quite significant discrimination. I have an interesting thing about language. You know, I work with a lot of people in the inner city.
Absolutely, yes, great work.
I always say they come into me, and the language they use is what my mother and people like it was born up would call bad language. You know, it's plenty curses, and it's very rich in allusions or curses, and. When I go and I speak at medical conferences, you know, I have to use a different type of language. But it struck me one day that, in fact, what I see as bad language, actually, people where I'm working, when they come and say that they were in hospital, they'll often say, he talked down to me, like he told me I need to be more responsible. And I, you know, what am I doing with myself? And what, you know, mm-hmm. And it struck me that, you know, my bad language is their normal language. And people in the inner city, their normal, you know, the language we use in hospitals is their bad language in a way. So I think language is a fascinating thing that, you know, is often used for both powers, never mind snobbery, but also used as a means of power.
You're not wrong there. And actually, you do raise another thing, because there is an Irish thing, and maybe you say the inner city, but I mean a country thing as well, where we have a very liberal use of what you'd call swear words or curse words, yeah, or the F word. We use more for emphasis than in anger or for any other reason. It's a kind of, it's almost like it's just for punctuation, basically.
And if you put an E instead of a U, it becomes acceptable.
Well, this is it. Then it becomes sort of quaint Irish, and you could put it on a T-shirt.
Exactly.
I'd like to know what people think about that, actually. Is it, when it's not used in an offensive way, is it still offensive to them, if you know what I mean? I would like to know, because for many people, it's just, as you say, it's just like, it's the way they speak. It's how they punctuate language, and that's how it comes out. And it's hard not to use those words. Austin, really good to talk to you.
Good night to you, Katie.
Best of luck to you.
Thanks a million.
Thank you. I bring in Francis. Francis, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
You also are in the farming world.
I live in a farming community, but I'm not a farmer.
All right. Okay. Are you Dublin originally?
I'm County Dublin, yes. And growing up, we called it a U.
Yes. And now?
And now I call it a yo, because farmers in my area call it a yo, so I bow to their expertise.
I mean, that's basically it, isn't it? You have to use the language that people understand and accept.
Absolutely, yes. And like a lot of words that I cannot think of offhand, depending on the region you're in, how it's pronounced.
And there's words actually that don't seem to exist in other parts of the country. I was talking about, down where I'm from in North Kerry, you would say a gwall, go out for a gwall of turf, that which is basically as much turf as you'd be able to carry in your arms. I haven't heard that anywhere else, and I've asked several people in other parts of the country have they heard that, and I wonder, is there anyone in Kerry down there that can tell me that this wasn't just something we said in our house, that it is actually a word. And I know a lot of these words are sort of, they're taken from the Irish, and it, you know, they originally were something close to it in Irish.
Yes.
I'd love to know more about that.
I'm afraid I can't help you on that matter.
Again, I'm asking everybody the scone one.
Scone.
Yes, I think we're probably going to get. Oh, here's one actually that came up again when we were talking about this today. Would you say gorse, furs, or whin?
Either gorse or furs, mainly gorse.
But not whin. I think whin is something, again, from...
It's a regional thing, isn't it?
I think it's a Northern Ireland thing as well. Yes, it might be up from those counties. And what about vase or vase?
Vase.
I would think now that'd be more on the posher end of things, Francis. Would you consider yourself posh, Frances?
Not at all. Not at all. No way.
Do you think...
Again, it's back to what we spoke about way back. Like nuns, when you were being educated, you called it what it was, a vase. They never called it a vase.
Did you do elocution in school?
I did.
Ah, you see, I knew you were posh, Frances.
I'm not posh. We just happened to have an elocution teacher. We were lucky rather than posh.
And what, like, because that time it seems to me that there was a huge influence or a huge emphasis on proper English, using the proper, the pronunciation.
Yeah.
Are we more relaxed now, do you think, in terms of accepting that regional accents and even regional pronunciations,
we are very relaxed about that. Most people are. But one of the things I heard one of your speakers talk about was the spelling and young people on their phones. They can't spell anymore. They don't know how to spell properly. I know there's the shortcuts that you take when you're sending a message or whatever. But with modern phones, you can speak into them and send your message that way. But they're typing in and they're not spelling the words correctly.
I do think that that's an issue, actually. And punctuation as well has changed, because they don't need punctuation on text.
No.
You know, that's not how you... And in fact, I think they would say to you that they'd know it was sent by a boomer if there was proper punctuation used, because no young person would possibly be going around putting in full stops and inverted commas.
No.
This is how we give ourselves away, Frances.
I'm definitely a boomer.
Frances, thanks so much for that. I have to take a call, but we've got more after this. Does anyone know what a tacky is?
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And can I bring in Shane now? Shane, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Shane, what's a tacky?
A tacky is a local term, and I've only heard it in Clare and in Limerick, for a runner.
Runner's shoes?
Shoes, yep. Running shoes, yep.
Tackies.
So you'd say tackies.
Actually, there's lots of words for runners, now that I think about it. It's one of those ones that, depending on your age... you'll call them various different things. Would you still use that for runners?
I don't wear them anymore, but I would. But I would say tackies. I was in the 80s, and I know in the 90s, all right, what would you say? People used to say, shake a tacky was to go to a disco. I don't know whether use the term tacky in Limerick anymore.
Wow. Sneakers, of course, was another one. I have to ask everybody, because we're going to have to do a final tally of this when we finish up today. Yo or you?
You.
Oh, you're a you man.
Yep.
And scone or scone?
Scone.
Okay. Traditional. Thanks, Shane. Tacky. We'll see if anyone else remembers tacky or used tacky, but maybe back in the day. What do we see? Who will we go to next? Cormac.
Yes, Katie.
You have another one now.
Yeah, I have one. It's you spell it ALMOND. It's the nut that you put into cakes and so on.
Okay, and so I call that now almond.
Yeah, that I would tend to agree with you. But there's a celebrity chef of note in Ireland who, almond, with the L, I always thought the L was silent. But and he's the only one I've heard using it. And
Which celebrity chef are we talking about now?
Oh, I couldn't possibly tell you. I really couldn't. I think everybody around the desk there will say, yeah, I know exactly who it is, but there you are.
Almond. Okay, and are you suggesting that it's a regional thing, or that he's got it wrong?
I'm not suggesting that for 1 minute. I just think maybe it's a sort of a, you were talking to the man a few speakers ago about, you know, the effect of, say, education and class and all that sort of thing on pronunciation. So perhaps it might be a pronunciation thing related to his career or to his profession, you know?
Yeah, interesting, actually. I wonder, is it a chefy thing? Like, is that what, if you're training, is that what...
It could well be.
Okay.
Well, on the runners, we called them gutties in my day.
Gutties?
Gutties, yeah.
I never heard that. You see, I knew that they're just one of those things that there are a lot of words for. Yeah. Gutties. So, tackies, gutties. What else did we come up with? Sneakers... Trainers, gutties, I never heard. What part of the country are you from, Cormac?
I'm in Bundoran, beautiful, bracing Bundoran by the sea.
You're not from Bundoran, though.
I am, yes. I was educated on the East Coast, but I've lived in Bundoran all my life.
Well, you have the softest Donegal accent, if you have one at all, that I've heard in a long time.
We see, this is another thing. We're in the very south, and the variance in accent between, let's say, Bundoran and Inishowen in the north, it's a day away. There's 20 or 30 different accents from east to west, north to south. We're influenced by, say, Sligo, North Sligo and North Leitrim. So there's that mix in there. You know,
you would be, yeah, you'd be close enough to Sligo there, indeed. You would,
that's it, yeah.
It's but yeah, lovely. It's an absolutely gorgeous place, Bundoran, isn't it?
So, there you are. Like, I mean, and we say, because again, there's plenty of lambing up in Donegal, we say yo, and I'm afraid we're back to scone on the other end.
Yo is definitely winning today. Scone, and that's because you're up towards that end of the country.
That's,
yeah, I think you're more likely to say scone up there. We'll know what to ask for when we go to the hotel in Bundoran the next time. Cormac, thanks a mil for that. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Ger. Hi, how are you?
Ger, you're from North Kerry, I believe.
I am, yeah. I'm from Knocknagoshal.
Not too far away at all from Douaugh, where is my home parish.
No, where I went to primary school. I'm actually technically Douaugh Parish as well. I'm from the border there.
Oh, right. So a neighbour's child. Okay, so tell me, Gwall, was that just us?
No, definitely not. It was a proper unit of measurement in my house. So you'd be sent out for a Gwall of turf or a Gwall of kittens to light the fire, or, you know, it was... Sometimes it was as much as you could carry, and sometimes it would be a handful. It depends a bit on context.
I am so relieved to hear somebody else tell me that that actually was something that was used in other households. Because I have brought it up with people over the years, and they'd looked at me like, what are you talking about? And that was exactly it. And in our house, it was most often used for turf, actually.
Yeah, maybe a gall of hay if you were out picking up hay as well. You know, if you were bringing it into the catalyst, you'd go out for a gall of hay for them or something like that. Yeah.
Would you still use it? Well, I suppose you wouldn't be sending people out for galls of hay too often these days, probably, Ger, would you?
Well, I could use it down here in Cork, but I don't think anyone would know what I was talking about.
Right.
Give it a go.
How would we spell it?
I would probably... yeah, I don't know, because you'd never see it written down, right? Mm-hmm. So I imagine it comes from an Irish word. But if I was writing it down in English, I'd probably do it phonetically. I'd say something like G-A-W-L or something like that, or G-A-U-L. But, you know, it would be an approximation.
Yeah.
You'd be and doing your best with it.
There wouldn't be that many sheep around Knocknagoshal.
No, mostly cattle, dairy or suckler. Yeah, but some sheep, certainly some.
And what would you call a girl sheep?
I don't know. I probably would call it a ewe, but like you say, we're not in the thick of that now. That's mostly, you'd read the word more than you'd hear it.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, even words like kippen, like they're strangely onomatopoeic, aren't they? They have that sort of sense of size and diminutiveness in them. But, you know, I don't know where it came from. I assume that's coming from an Irish background as well, or I don't know. Might be pure Anglo-Irish. I don't know.
Again, I want to do, it's another one. Do people use the word kippen generally for...
I don't know. Do they use it in your house?
We would. Oh, absolutely. Go out and get some kippens for the fire. Yeah. For it's basically kindling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I'm just trying to think now, what other words would we have used like that? Because a lot of them would be connected to farm and outdoor activity. A sally rod? That's another one.
Yeah. So sallies. I think like the Latin for a willow is a salix. So I think that probably is kind of connected to the idea of a sally.
Now, Jo, you sound like you're a lot more educated about this than I am. The Latin, you say?
Yeah, salix. So your willow is a salix.
That's, I never knew that now, and that's where the sally rod comes from.
That's where your sally gardens come from, I think.
Brilliant. And you're not based in Knocknagoshal anymore, Jo?
No, I'm not. I'm down in Cork. I'm a teacher down in Cork, a secondary school English teacher.
Ah, so this is why you might have a bit more knowledge about the, what is it, etymology, isn't it, of where language comes from, where the words come from?
There you go.
Jared, thanks so much for reassuring me that a scone or scone?
Well, my mother's from Sligo, so it's a scone.
There you are now. Like Cormac, it's a scone up there. Okay, Jared, thanks a mil for that. Where will we go next? Donny.
Hello, Katie. How are you?
I'm very well. Again, the sheep word.
Yo.
Okay. Where are you
we
from?
Say yo.
Where are you from?
Glenismole up the Dublin Hills.
All right. Okay. Yeah. I knew that if we talked to anyone down, any Wicklow sheep farmer, you're going to say yo, I think. Are you farming yourself?
Yeah. Yeah.
And have you ever heard sheep farmers around your way using the word you?
No, not really. No, there's even a hill, a piece of a hill that we call the Ilio. And some people would say, just now, I don't know if you're familiar with a man called Barry Dalby who does east-west mapping. And he's very good with maps and place names and all. And he thinks that it actually is a name like yo, rather than you.
Oh, really?
And I think I think it might come from the way of saying it in Scotland, like where they say yow, where instead of you, they say yow. And I think it's pronounced, or maybe not so much anymore, but I think it's spelled Y-O-U-G-H or something like that, as a yow in Scotland.
Oh, right. So it might be a completely different word, actually.
Well, I think ours could be a kind of a derivative from it, you know, or come down like that.
All right. Do you eat scones or scones?
Oh, we'd eat scones and we'd be burning fours.
You'd be burning
fours. Like the fire.
Right.
We're not allowed to burn them anymore, but when we used to burn them in the fire, even when you'd be getting up and you'd say kippens, we'd call them kippeens.
Kippeens, yeah, exactly. And would you go for a gwall of turf ever?
Never heard that one, no.
Yeah,
never heard that one.
I do think that must be a Kerry one. That's the one that people kind of look at me more, scratch their head most if I ask them about it. And last one, Donny, I don't know if you like cut flowers, but vase or vase?
Vase. Okay. Like you say about the, like you said to the lady there before about the going for the gwall of hay, like there's not so much. There's nobody using hay, loose hay anymore. There's not many people using turf. So you don't, it's a word that probably won't be used that much by the looks of people in your own county, like where still old people using the, bringing in a few turf or a bit of hay, like butcher. There's no loose hay anymore. It's a bale and whatever you want to bring now.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, there's not much use for the word at all. Donny, thanks a mil for that. We'll bring in Emma now. Emma, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
Where are you from, Emma, before we do anything else?
From Letterkenny, living in Belfast.
Okay, and a lovely Letterkenny accent too.
it's funny you say that though, Katie, because a lot of people say to me, oh, you don't sound like you're from Donegal, but the your previous speaker on saying, well, you know, there's Bundoran and there's Anishinaabe and there's native Irish speakers or somebody from Letterkenny. So there's a whole load of different accents. And I think my accent might be a wee bit more neutral because it's like you were saying, if you've lived somewhere else, maybe you sort of soften your accent and you shave the rough edges off it to make yourself understood. So I think if I was running around saying things like, a while handling or something was desperate when I lived in Brussels, I wouldn't have made myself understood very well.
Do people love your accent when you were living in Brussels? Were you, Emma?
Yeah, I was in Belgium, so I was in Brussels, and then before that I was in Budapest, so I was in Hungary. So I think that's where my accent got a bit more neutral.
Oh, I mean, yeah. Did you find people struggled with certain sounds from your accent?
I think it was more to do with the speed. I think when you're with other Irish people, your rate of speaking it just is exasperated and just goes up. So I think it was more the speed. So it was slowing it down and maybe taking out some of those colloquial things that you'd say. But I love all that. I love it's the when you're at home and it's all those lovely regional quirks and it's the colour and the magic. I love things like that. So I hope we never lose them.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure, for sure. Okay, we have to go through the list. So Emma, yo are you?
Yo, all the way.
Scone or scone?
Scone.
And what did you call your mom?
Mammy.
Mammy, yeah. I do think that's a north of the country one as well. You're more likely to hear people use mammy. Whereas I think in other parts of the country, people kind of move away from mammy when they get into their teens.
A certain age, yeah. I probably did go to mum when I was a teenager because you're like, oh no, I can't say mammy, but I've gone back to it again. And there's friends of mine in, you were saying, sort of down in your part of the world, it would be mom. Friends of mine in Galway would have used mom as well. So I think I don't think mom made it up maybe as far northwest as up.
Yeah, no, I have heard it's a word in Galway as well, for sure. Yeah, and it's funny not in Donegal then, because it does tend to kind of be close to Gaeltacht areas that it seems to have survived. But
yeah, that's true.
It's so funny that we all have the natural way, and a lot of it, I suppose, passed down through families. Emma, lovely to talk to you. Take care. Quick one, Dennis.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
I'm good. You were reminiscing about Glenroe.
Yeah, I texted in earlier. That would have been the first time I'd have come across the term yours. Dinny and Miley would have used it, so you'd have to give kudos for accuracy today, the Glenroe script writers. I wouldn't have been too familiar with sheep farming. I was only, whatever, 8 or 9, watching Glenroe and hearing them use this strange word made me ask my father what the story was. It was something I found interesting, just obviously at the top of the show.
Absolutely.
Regarding your own place, I work in sports journalism, and I think was it back in 2008 or 2009, Douai won the Munster Club Junior Football Championship. And
a glorious victory, can we just say, Dennis?
But a colleague of mine from Cork, who wouldn't have been too familiar with them prior to then, he saw it written down and assumed that it was Dwac.
Yeah.
and another one then on the GA front would be, well, it's kind of ironic because Hurley is my surname, but Hurley and Hurl, you know, kind of around the Midlands and Kilkenny especially, they'd say Hurl. And you'd have people debating on Twitter the whole time as to which is the right or wrong, but just different, and it's okay to be different. These regional variants are good to have, I think.
Yeah, I did often wonder that one, actually. Where, because Kilkenny would be Hurl, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would, yeah. That'd be that kind of South Leinster, I suppose, yeah. Kilkenny, Wexford, it'd be very strong there, yeah.
And you kind of think they would. What about Tipperary then? Would they be more likely to say Hurley?
I'm from Cork, so it's all Hurley here. I'd say Tip maybe mainly hurley and a bit of hurl, kind of closer to the Kilkenny side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I did wonder where does the border, where do you draw the border when it comes to the hurley hurl border?
It's strange how you get these differences. And even then, you were talking about languages and how things would influence others. And like, even though we speak English, we kind of have our own cadence to it based on the sentence formation in Irish. Like, I'd often get a slagging for saying that somebody is after dying because the Irish is Tarish Boss, you know, rather than someone has died. And even the way we say, I've a pot of tea made, rather than I've made a pot of tea.
Oh yeah, and we say a lot of things backwards again because of the translation from the Irish. It's Hiberno-Irish, isn't that what we're? That's what we all talk. And it's so much nicer, I think, than the.
There's a nice rhythm to it, definitely.
Absolutely, Dennis. Lovely talking to you. We'll talk to you again, and we will take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, we're going to leave that for the moment because we want to turn to something which is a lot more serious and life-changing, really, for so many people. Today, if you read your paper again today, you will see that housing inflation is running at an 8-year high. It's at over 12% year on year. It's like just an astonishing situation that people are finding themselves in. We had a listener get in touch with us, sent us an email expressing the unbelievable frustration of when the fact that he has done everything right. He has played the game. He has done the saving. He has got his money together. He's got his mortgage approval and he still can't get a house anywhere near where he works. Listen to this.
I'm in my early 30s, working in a well-paid, high-pressure job for a professional services firm. I work in the city centre 5 days a week and currently live outside of Dublin, commuting around 120 kilometres every day. I'm on the road by 5 a.m. and rarely home before 8 p.m. It's exhausting, but like many others, it's what I do to build my career. I do love my job. After years of hard work and saving, I finally got mortgage approval. With my deposit, I have a budget of €500,000, a huge amount of money by any standard. I'm single and I've sacrificed a lot to get to this point, but despite all this, I still can't afford a house anywhere inside the M50. I don't qualify for any allowances or first-time buyer grants either. How is this our reality? How is it that someone who did everything right, went through our education system, built a solid career, worked my ass off and saved every cent I could, still can't afford to live anywhere near where I work? What more am I supposed to do? I'd love to know if others feel the same frustration. Are there more people out there in this position? And more importantly, will the government ever step in to help people like me? Or are we just being left behind?
Yeah, so you can just hear the frustration there through that email. It seems beyond the beyonds that you can have €500,000 to spend and that's not enough. And again, because he's working hard, because he's got that job, he's not entitled to any grants. So he's saying, as you said there, are we just being left behind? John, good afternoon to you.
Hello. Yeah.
Yeah, John, I mean, a lot of people out there today will have their heads in their hands just looking at those figures. I mean, and anyone who's out there looking for a house will know that won't come as any surprise to them. It's just so frustrating.
Yeah. Well, the cause of the problem is very simple. It's the planning permit. It's the planning system. And the funny thing about this is, and this people probably don't realise this, why was planning brought in? It was brought in, the British brought theirs in 1948, but we brought theirs in 62, I think. It was brought in because it had become very cheap and affordable to build houses. It had become really, really cheap. And it was a way of regulating the system, and it has been a victim of its own success. And that's houses should be really cheap. It's the cheapest ever. You can build houses so cheaply today, really, really cheaply.
I'm not sure that's the case now, because I mean, we were doing stories there over the last year of galloping inflation in construction costs, and that's a huge issue.
Even so, you could no doubt build a site for $5,000, and that's an acre of land. What's an acre of land cost? $20,000. How many sites can you get at that? And then
where are you buying your acre of land for?
Well, the thing is, you zone the land. How do you zone land? That's a question a lot. How do you zone land? You zone it with a pen. You zone it with a pen. We haven't enough land. We should overzone land. We should build in having mistakes, but we won't do that. Everything is done the slow way, and we should build basic bog standard semi-detached 3-bedroom houses. We have loads of land. We're not Hong Kong. We have, what's the population of Ireland? 6 million. The population of Britain, 10 times that. And in Ireland, that's maybe half, twice as big. Plenty of land. But we have allowed the planning system to get in the way. And the best example of that would be bedsits. Why were bedsits abolished? I was in a bedsit. I don't remember, because if you're in a bedsit, you remember in the 70s, you weren't in a bedsit. But bedsits were abolished. Why were bedsits abolished? And the mindset that abolished bedsits is the mindset behind all the trouble we have today.
Well, hang on a second now. Were bedsits not abolished because there was concerns and they wanted to, improve housing for, lower income renters?
What I would say to that is, I want to live in a bedsit. It's none of your business. Keep your nose out of my business. The government stuck its nose. Now, I'll answer that another way. If bedsits weren't abolished, would they abolish them now? Do you think they would abolish them now and put 20,000 people out on the road? Would they abolish them then? Why were they abolished? It's this mindset that we have to have the perfect, and we have made the perfect the enemy of the good. And that's the problem.
I think a lot of people would say that getting rid of bedsits might have been an issue, but I think at the time there was some horrific hovels that were on the market and people being asked for rent for them. Hovels.
But I will say, if I was a young student and I was saying there's a horrific hovel there, it's 50 quid a week, I would say, grand, I live in that horrific hovel for 50 quid a week. What has happened, if the authorities did what they're doing with housing to the retail, with the food retail market, we'd be in a state of famine. Unfortunately, that's the way. It's nobody's fault. It is nobody's fault. It happened incrementally from 1962 up till now. It just happened bit by bit by bit by bit. And that's why we're in the problem we're in at the moment. And we're the rest of the West are in the same problem. They have the same issues with planning, but Ireland is nearly worse, a little bit worse than the rest, and it needs to be sorted. It's going to be very, very difficult.
But Aaron, if we just put through and voted through the biggest piece of legislation, or the second biggest piece of legislation in the history of the state, which is the new planning bill.
Yeah.
Is that going to make any difference? You see, I'm a bit. My
feeling is we need less legislation, not more legislation. We should strip it away. You know, I hope it makes a difference. And I could think of no worse job than being in charge of housing in Ireland. No matter what he does or she does, they're going to get it from every side. It's really, really difficult. I hope it makes a difference. But my basic point is we have to make planning much simpler. We have to zone. Just say we zoned, 100 acres outside a small village. We should come back and say we're zoning 500. Say we want to build 100,000 houses. We should say we'll build 500,000. Let's make everything much bigger, and let's build in mistakes. Mistakes are going to be made, but that's the only way. Everything will have to become looser. And we will have to get away from the perfect, because
can I just say to you though, John?
Yeah,
they did do exactly what you're saying. There is build these big estates outside small villages and overbuild, and sure, that's what left us with the ghost estates back in.
Well, that was because
after
they
the crash.
Didn't build them where they should have built them, which was inside the M50. You could probably put another. You could probably put 500,000 people inside the M50. I mean, most other countries in Europe, their capital cities, there'd be far more. I mean, Colin McCarthy was always on about that. how much green space there is inside the M50 for a major city, which is crazy. You could build a huge amount of houses inside the M50.
Would you put them in the Phoenix Park?
Oh, well, no. You don't need, the Phoenix Park is sacrosanct. That's a terrible thing to say. I'm a gardener. It's beautiful. That's one of our crowning jewels of the country.
So where would we put them then?
Sorry?
Where would we put them if we're not going to put them in the Phoenix
There's
Park?
There's loads of land. There's loads of land. If you drive from, we say, Blanchardstown, we say you drive from the halfway house, the edge of Phoenix Park, out to Blanchardstown, the amount of green fields on either side. If you drive from Finglas out to Ashburn, the amount of green fields on either side, any amount, you could put 100,000, 200,000 houses there, you know. We have plenty of ground.
There was
plenty of, you know, and it's not, as I say, it's nobody's fault. It's just ended up like this. Nobody's fault.
Well, as you know, there, like every government, as long as I've been doing what I'm doing, had tweaks, goes at this, the housing market with one tweak or two tweaks or three tweaks or 10 tweaks. And it seems that everyone makes things incrementally slightly worse.
Yeah. It does. Like the beds, I'll come back to the beds because the reason I would come back to that is because that law should be reversed. Yeah, but nothing, and the reason I'm saying that is nothing is ever reversed. Sometimes we have to remove stuff. But we keep adding new stuff on top. You know, we need, but it's not going to be done until it gets much worse. Things are going to have to get worse, unfortunately.
God, I don't know. If you talk to people out there now, you can hardly imagine it's going to get any worse. Sure, we had the housing minister acknowledging there in the last few days that the apartment building has collapsed. I think that was the word that was actually used. Apartment building has collapsed in this country. And that's an issue, I think, we're told is an issue around the financing of these apartment blocks.
But what the planning system has done, it's run all the small and medium builders out of the business because there's too much risk. And the risk is not in the building. The risk is in getting the planning, getting your thing through the planning process. So all the small builders and the medium builders are gone. So there's only the big giant builders left. And it was never meant to be like that. And for apartments, you need big, real big builders. But at least 10 times this year, I've seen in the paper, 500 apartments torn down by Lord Planala, 600 torn down, 300 torn down. But even when they get it through the first stage of the local authority, they get the fall of the fence of Bord Pleanála, and even if they get through Bord Pleanála, then somebody takes judicial review and it falls of the fence there. So it's very, very difficult. Why would anybody want to build in Ireland? You know, why would they?
Well, we can only hope that they will, and they do, because listening to listeners like that caller we had there.
I know, it's absolutely awful. Doing everything right. The fellow does everything right and obeys all the rules and works hard. And this is the first time since the history of our state that a guard or a teacher, for 3 or 4 years working, can't afford their own house. That has never happened before in the history of our state. And that should be a real wake-up call.
Yeah, indeed, we should. And I see I'm up on a screen here beside me. I see in the Dáil, they're talking about speaking rights today.
Yeah.
We'll see when they get around to talking about housing again. But we'll take a break there. Thanks for that, John.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, we read in the Irish Farmers Journal today that one third of farmers are working more than 60 hours a week. That's from the Minister of State, Martin Hayden. 60 hours a week, that is no joke. James, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Would you be putting in those kind of hours, James?
Yeah, at least, and probably double it, Katie.
Are they some yo's I hear in the background there, James?
Them are proper yo's you hear there, yeah.
This is are you well into lambing season now?
Yeah, it's in the thick of it, yeah. You're right in the thick of it, yeah.
Where are you based there?
County Leith.
Laois, yeah, I thought that was a Midlands accent, all right. So tell me what did your day is like at this time of year then?
Oh, Katie, what a day is like, sure, they're relentless, like, yeah. I'll give you an example. For yesterday evening, from yesterday evening, I suppose, at 6 o'clock, a few yours started lambing here, and it went right through the night, all night, into early morning, and I got into bed this morning at about 8:30 after 27 yours lambed in that period of time.
Oh,
and I got out of bed at 11 o'clock, and there's about 15 yours after lambing since. It's just relentless. Like it's when you're on your own, it never stops. It's just go, go, go.
And
look after the newborn lamb. Look after the ones that were born yesterday. Put out the ones that were born the day before. It never stops.
Are you on your own there, James?
Yeah, on my own. Yeah, yeah.
And
on my own.
How many sheep would you have?
I would keep near 500 sheep.
And how many ewes would you have lambing then in that?
Yeah, about 420.
God, so that's a lot of work on your own.
A lot of work, yeah. A lot of work, yeah. It's, oh yeah, Katie, it's relentless. As I say, it's relentless. You walk. You could walk. Jesus, you could walk. I don't know how many steps would make a kilometre, but you could walk 40,000, 50,000 steps in 24 hours. Like, I actually put on a watch one day. My young lad's watch one day. There's a chap with disability, and I put on his watch one day, counted the steps, and there were 38,000 steps on it.
In less than
24 hours. Oh, less than that, like, yeah.
And that wouldn't be on the flat either?
Well,
I suppose it's flat enough in Laois, if I think about it.
Yeah, well, it's not too bad. It's around the yard, like, you're... Yeah, it's not too bad. But it's heavy going. I'll tell you what it is. If anybody, myself included, you put on a bit of a pouch during the summer. But when it comes to lambing time, the pouch disappears fairly quick and the trousers start slipping down over the hips. It's a great way of losing weight.
I was just going to say it.
Yeah.
It just shows how much energy it takes to get through a day. And explain to us what it involves if you're not used to lambing. Well, like would you have to intervene very often with a ewe?
No, the biggest problem. Different people have different ways of lambing sheep. Sheep lambing outdoors probably more physically demanding because you're outside. But inside, the biggest problem you have inside is, and I'm only speaking on my own behalf, is you have all these sheep in four different sheds, and they're all lambing together in different sheds. Now there could be 100 sheep in each shed. We call shed A. There could be a sheep lambing in shed A, but there could also be four or five sheep lambing in shed A. If you're not there to take away what lambs first, you have a big problem if lambs get mixed up with yours and they don't mother up properly. And that's the problem you have. Sometimes you'd know from experience whether you'd intervene or not. If a ewe is going on too long, just from experience, you would know how to intervene and help her out. It doesn't happen too often, but yeah, you do have to intervene.
And by intervene, you mean pull the lamb out yourself?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, yeah. Here last night, recently, I had one and she was mooching around for a good while, and I eventually got a bit of time to go at her. I said, I better go at her. And she's coming, and the lamb was presenting properly and took a bit of a pull, all right. But I had to go after the second lamb. And so that's where the problem was, because the second lamb was coming. He was breached. He was coming with his backside and no legs. And that's why she wasn't lambing. So, yeah, you'd have to do a bit of TLC and look after her and get the lamb out.
And would a lamb survive in that circumstance?
That lamb actually didn't, because it was going on too long. And he was alive when he came out, but you just couldn't save him. You do all you can to save him. I even have a little lad for a little suction to suck the mucus out of throat. But no, nothing works like that. He was just going on too long. the lungs were probably full at that stage.
Do you find that hard then, losing a lamb like that when you, you know, when you're...
Oh, yeah. Oh, it kills me. It kills me because I do say every lamb you lose at birth is €100 when you're selling them. So that'd be the killing side of it. But then, look, you get up and you go on and you have to attend to the next one because you can't dwell on these things. There's bigger problems and bigger losses in sheep farming than maybe losing a lamb at lambing. Thank God I don't experience them too often, but have experienced them.
How long more does the lambing go on now, James? How long more of this are you looking ahead to?
Sure. With me, it's probably the second week in April.
It'll ease up.
I'd be looking forward to going to bed at 10 or 11 o'clock at night, yeah.
That was my next question. When it's not lambing, when you're not doing these like crazy days, it's still long hours though, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Sort of look at it. I won't say it's like a dairy farmer, but it's definitely 8 o'clock in the morning, 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. The first of my lambs now are coming 6 weeks old and they'll be due to be dosed for different things and you want to be in the hole of your health going to try and catch them little bios.
And
even though there's a handling system there for it, but it's all labour intensive and it's all wear and tear. It's all wear and tear.
Do you love it, or do you ever think this nothing could, you know, this isn't a life at all?
Oh, I think, Katie, to be a sheep farmer, you have to love sheep, and I do love sheep. Yeah. For as long as I can remember, following my father around. I can remember 1973, going back that far, following my father. He'd be going out to look at sheep at night and they'd run out behind him, a little chap running out behind him. He'd have a big old black coat on him out the fields with a flash lamp. and from that time, yeah, the whole way through. Just love sheep. And I have a son that loves sheep, mad about sheep. He's in Wales at the moment. He says to me one day, or no, he didn't say it to me one day. He said to a man one day, he says, if there were sheep from here to Stradbally, he says, there wouldn't be enough for me. And he went off to Wales a few years ago doing his college course and fell in love with the place. And he's on a farm. There's about 6,000 or 7,000 sheep out there. Wow. That's where he is. And he's mad about sheep. I'd love to have him home now too, but at the same time, young people, they have to spread their wings too, I suppose, don't they?
They do. But you wouldn't be doing anything else despite the exhaustion?
Oh, no. Oh, absolutely not. No, I know nothing else. And there's like over the years, I would have had a couple of tough years that things didn't go right, and you said, Jesus. Like, how are them feckers? Only there might be an E in it, there could be a U in it, but you'd have problems with dogs and you'd have problems with the big year with abortion one year. Probably broke me in a way, maybe. But you get up and go on because you go to the field where the lambs are running around and that's the reward, like. Yeah. It's all your hard work. In the month of April, you'll go to the fields and feed them and see lambs running around, skipping around the place. And that's the reward, that you're at least you're doing some good and you're after getting rewarded for the work you're after putting in, especially if you have a good crop of lambs, you know.
Yeah.
This year's very good. Last year was bad. And the weather is everything. The weather this year's, I'd say there's thousands of lambs saved this year because of the fine weather. This time last year, they were dying out in the fields, it's so cold and wet.
Yeah, it is. There's definitely that sense of spring now for the lambing.
That sense of spring, yeah. And there's no two years the same. Like, there's different losses every year. You have to deal with different things every year and different things every day of the week. Yeah.
James, fair play to you is all I can say. It's no joke what you're doing there, but it's amazing. There's nothing to keep you going like doing something you love. There's no doubt about that.
Oh yeah, absolutely sure. Why would you be doing it if you didn't?
Yeah. Well, there's plenty that are stuck doing things they don't love, and I suppose that's what we all have to remember.
Well, I suppose so, yeah. Yeah, I do suppose so, yeah.
James, thanks a mil. I've got Neely as well. Neely, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
You're over there in West Cork.
I am, yeah. I'm up here on the Kerry border in West Cork, and I'm collecting the sheep first to lamb. I'm a small bit different to James. In the hill areas, we're much later, so we aim for to have them lambing the 1st of April. But this year, no, they have cut us out a bit. I have a lamb here in the quad with me, and I have, he's staying very quiet, and I have a few more to collect as well, so I'm bringing down the sheep now. So my son and myself now are in for a month of full belt with lambing sheep and looking after them and that.
And what kind of hours are you facing into now for that month?
Oh, there is no doubt that the hours, but we will share it. My son Darren, he will be doing the night shift, even though he's part-time working. He'll be getting up at night, and I'll stay late at night before I go to bed, and then I'll go very early in the morning again. And we will be, I suppose, we'll be covering 24 hours, but you're talking about a minimum of 16 hours a day now for the lambing, and we'll have the calving coming up as well at the same time. We have a suckler herd, so it could be all systems go, but the lambing have started as from today, and I know they will continue now, and the last 2 years we have changed our system. I always had the sheep lambing outside. Now I should say as well that we have a hill flock. Mm-hmm. And it's just mainly hill. We're very high up here. And the last couple of years, my son decided he'd put him in for lambing. And I thought at first I was a bit skeptical of the whole thing, having given all my life. I'm 73 years of age. And I was cheap since I was in the cradle. But it was the right idea. It's much easier inside on the person. Now, like James said there, it's a bit complicated as well, because there's a whole lot of sheep inside together, and if they lamb an own to you, well, then there could be mismothering, and you're trying to figure out which sheep had which lamb and all that.
And do the lambs not naturally stick with the mother? No, does that not? Is that not?
No, it's just the mother stick with the lamb, but like when there's another sheep calling them away, sometimes you have a sheep that's just starting in labour, and they tend to steal lambs from the others because of whatever is in that, the bonding thing, and they take them away. So unless you're there, you could end up with one sheep that have three lambs and another sheep might have one, and you'd say, which is which? Now that has to go back. So there's a lot of work in that. There's also a lot of work in the lambing. I was helping a neighbour just this morning there, taking a lamb from a sheep. I do a lot of that and have always done it, because I was full-time farming with sheep all my life. And you have to be part of a vet as well, even though we have great vets. And I'm out, like as I say now, I'm in Bantry, outside of Bantry in the hills there. And we have some great vets, but we tend to try and not call them too often if we can at all.
Yeah.
We try and do the vet and everything ourselves. So we'd be reasonably successful with it. And, James said there, you have lambs with, there's be difficulty lambing, and like there might be two coming, and they could be a big lamb, and there might be no leg coming. You'd have to push the lamb back to turn them around for to get them out. So after doing that, then you have to apply penicillin for fear of
infection
to the sheep. So it's all systems go, it's a huge, but I don't envy James there now. I suppose I do envy him that he's nearly finished. We're starting from today, so we'll have at least the month of April completely added, and maybe a little longer with repeats and that kind of thing. So it usually goes on for roughly about 6 weeks.
Yeah. Neely, I'll let you go there, back to your back to your sheep.
Yeah, well,
and the very best of luck, Neely.
Holding the sheep, and they're looking at me. See why I turned off the quad. They're wondering, like, why I'm not instructing them for to move on.
But, Go back to them. Don't leave them confused. Listen, Neely, thanks. Lovely talking to you. Before we go to the break, just to let you know what's happening in our National Parliament in the Dáil. Terrible, terrible scenes again, apparently. Ciarán Cóirla calling the situation farcical, an absolute disgrace, saying the deputies were making a holy show of themselves. That's a quote, I think. Ciarán Cóirla, Verona Murphy, has now adjourned the Dáil again.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And I'm told the Dáil will resume again at 3:05. So if you want to tune into that, see what's going on there. But before we go, I want to bring in Eilish. Eilish, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Yeah, we're back to, we're talking about the various words we have that maybe aren't shared around the country.
Yes, and I have only partial memory, but I have some, somebody mentioned a goal, but I remember my dad telling me specific words for smaller units of measurement, say a brame or something that sounded like a brame, I think was a pinch. And then there was a maum, and I don't know, was a maum a fistful or two cupped hands, because again there were two separate words. So a maum was either a fistful or it was two cupped hands.
And this would be like for baking, like you'd say.
That would be for baking. And then say for turf, a barth, to my memory, was one handful, whereas a goal was two armfuls. And a kishon was like bigger again, was a creel of turf or whatever.
Okay, so give me those again. So the first one,
the handful was either a maum. I don't know, was that a fishful or two cupped hands?
Right.
It sounded like maum.
Right.
Barth was one armful. Uh-huh. A goal was two armfuls.
A goal or a gwall? Gwall, we would have said.
We used to say goal. I'm West, but you're Munster, but I'm Connacht.
Okay, right. We won't argue over it.
No.
And the last one you had was?
Kishon then was bigger again. That was like a creel of turf.
A creel of turf. Mm. Even creel is a lovely word as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Then brown bread, we'd never refer to brown bread as a koshkin. And the crust was the cooling.
Oh, I love it.
So koshkin was brown bread and cooling was the crust.
Eilish, I'm going to have to go, Eilish. I'm just looking at the clock. I'm actually over time. Lovely talking to you. We'll come back to this again because there's lovely variances in language out there. On sound today, we had Mark McGrath. Our researcher was Richie Byrne. Broadcast coordinator was Shane Galvin. And today's programme was produced by Emily Phelan. That's all we have time for today. Now, stand by for Ray.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Elevate your bedroom with our fresh new bedding designs and colours, in-store and online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.